Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, and Dr. Paul Hall in Raising Expectations.
Well, hello, friends. Welcome to this Monday night's version of Raising Expectations. We are glad you're here because your being here is what makes this a special time. And, you know, I look forward each week to introducing, as you know, our family of co-hosts. Wonderful, wonderful people. They all have friends, believe it or not. And you're going to meet a great friend today of Rob and Nancy. You know that we have one of our co-hosts, Dr. Paul Hall, unable to be with us tonight. Also, Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen. Rob is a former Top Gun pilot, as you know, and trained all those guys you saw in the movie and the real McCoys also, all the real ones. And like I said, he's going to teach me to fly a Piper Cub someday. It's going to be really exciting. So besides that, we also have with us Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. And as you know, Dr. Craig is a special surgeon. He helps people every single day on call. And also Stephanie is a life coach and helps people to get healthy. That's what you call a dynamic duo. So tonight we want to introduce our special guest, but I'm going to pitch this one over to our good friend Rob and Nancy Hansen. Rob has known Seth for a while, and we're going to have a great night. So strap in, hold on, because this is going to be an exciting evening. Hey, Rob, introduce your friend so we all get to know him, would you?
Well, as Seth would say, it's a delight to welcome my personal favorite radio talk show host, I believe, the most intelligent and well-read, well-written, well-educated radio talk show host in the country, but not the world. But, you know, and I'm going to back it up a little bit because everybody knows the name Rush Limbaugh. Everybody knows the name Sean Hannity. Most people probably know the name Sebastian Gorka, and we can go on and on, Larry Elder, Laura Ingraham, and so on and so on. But I believe more people need to know the name Seth Leibson. And I'm going to tell you about it and why. First of all, he has a lot of previous experience in Washington, D.C., both in the think tank world, which I'm going to be asking some questions about probably later, and also in what he calls the public policy world. And that's a world that a lot of people, including myself, aren't overly familiar, nor are we educated about. So we're dealing with a brilliant guy who happens to also have a law degree, and we won't hold that against you, Seth, okay? He's an author, and I'm hoping that we can talk about at least one of his two books. This is called American Greatness, that he co-wrote with a former radio talk show host, co-host of his on the Seth and Chris show a couple of years ago, Chris Buskirk. Seth, this is one of the best books I've ever read, and it covers a topic that I think most people aren't even remotely familiar with, which we'll talk about. It has to do not just with Donald Trump's election and win, but why so many people got it wrong. Okay. Oh, sorry, Nancy. Just kidding. Okay. Just visual effects. Another book that he co-wrote with William Bennett, former Secretary of Education, The Fight of Our Lives. It was written in about 2011, if I recall, Seth. This is a very important book, and we may or may not have time to talk about it, but we may be able to at least touch on it a little bit, because I think this is an issue, and it has to do with radical Islam, that has sort of fallen off the radar screen in the past few years and has been overtaken by a bunch of other events. I don't know, President Trump, for instance. Seth is a classically educated guy. I always like to say people like Seth are sort of the noted observer of the human condition in an educated sense. He's a real patriot, and he's a great example that you don't have to be in uniform to be a patriotic, solid American, okay? And you can also be a hero without being in a uniform and doing the day-to-day battles, whether it's policy or whether it's just hosting a three-hour radio show, to get some points across that more Americans really need to hear and usually don't hear from the sources that they get their information from. Mm-hmm. He is really a super spokesman and advocate of the problems that are plaguing both our declining culture and our public education system and higher academics. And I think that's one of Seth's big passions. Well, actually two of them. He looks at things in a very clear-headed way. He's a great political commentator. He also has, I think, a very fascinating history in that Seth walked away before walking away was cool. In fact, I think he walked away before walking away even existed. And I think we'll probably start off with that after a couple more comments here. He's a student of a very noted, famous conservative writer, thinker, commentator, professor, Harry Jaffa. And again, I'm hoping, Seth, we can expand on his influence on you and on the whole conservative movement in general. I mentioned earlier he worked with and for Bill Bennett when he was the Secretary of Education. He ran his own think tank. He's a member of you're a senior member or vice president now of the Claremont Institute, right, which is no small cookies, really, from a thinker standpoint, of which Seth is a brilliant thinker. He's also a very gracious radio host. And in an age where we hear a lot of back and forth on social media, not usually positive, Seth, and I've heard him do this, has actually taken callers who may be ideologically from the other end of the spectrum and want to engage them, which is really the only and best way when you get down to it of trying to, you know, win hearts and minds. It's not working, obviously, on social media because everybody's just yelling at each other instead of discussing with each other. And I don't know why that is when you think of social media being an arena where I thought it was supposed to bring people together, and instead it sort of brings people apart, which is kind of bizarre. He's on, and I want to plug this on purpose, he's on 960 The Patriot, and I want everybody that's listening, including all you co-hosts here, to download 960 The Patriot, okay, on your app, whatever it is, and listen to Seth and any of the other talk show hosts, if you have time. Seth is on from 3 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, and that's 3 to 6 Pacific time, or Arizona time, which right now it's the same, but you know what I mean. But download 960, The Patriot. Listen to Seth. Then you'll understand better why I'm such a huge fan of his, because the shows from his monologues at the beginning, which are incredibly well thought out, sometimes complicated. And Nancy even said today when we were listening to Seth's monologue, I think I lost him right here. So it's not something for, you know, the I don't know, low information, low educated, the feeble minded. But this is a thinking man's thinking man radio talk show host. OK, and I think what Seth has to say needs to be said, and is being said in a wonderful fashion by this great guy. He's had great guests. He's had, you know, from, you know, Alan Dershowitz to obviously William Bennett, the Arizona Congress people, senators. We get an occasional regular visitor with our Arizona GOP rep, Kelly Ward. He's had Dr. Ben Carson on the show. Many, many policy academics, including some from today, from the Claremont, or from Pepperdine School of Public Policy, which is very, very fascinating stuff to me because I never knew anything about it. He's also had a lot of very senior Trump spokespeople on. And so he has a lot of reach in areas where more Americans should be paying attention to, and which is why I so strongly advocate you guys listening to him. He's had last week, in fact, Attorney General William Barr on. And if that isn't impressive, I don't know what is. One of my favorite guests that he's had is Dr. Judy Jasser, who happens to be a Muslim scholar. And he has come on several of his shows and has talked about some really important issues between and things that are current event-wise between the Muslim world, the Christian world, the Jewish world, and why. And he's very anti-radical Islamic for obvious reasons, but he's, again, one of the reasons why I like to listen to his show. Another great thinker mind is Heather McDonald, who I think runs the Manhattan Institute, and she's brilliant. She's just brilliant in every single possible way. He's a Renaissance man, and there's no question about that. I also have to plug, he has the best bumper music in all of radio.
That's the, I was waiting for
that. That's none. Okay, just today, we had Jay and the Americans. We had Jim Croce. We had Son of a Sailor, right? Jimmy Buffett. He also has a lot of Sinatra. Because he's a trumpet player, he loves Maynard Ferguson. And, of course, as a recovering drummer, Seth and I talked about, well, why don't you play more Buddy Rich or some Jones or Tony Williams or something? Or Count Basie.
We give you Neil Peart.
Okay, Neil Peart. Right. We can. Well, and we're working on getting Seth some Rush bumper music because his producer Bill, who's also a great guy, really is a huge Rush fan, as am I must say. But you know, we go from Sinatra to Van Halen. We do Maynard, Billy Joel. Country, a lot of country music. And so the bumper music in and of itself may be enough to just listen to the show, but really the centerpiece of Seth's show is Seth himself and the ideas he brings. And I'm just so impressed because every show is thought-provoking. Every show is extremely fascinating. Every show is actually fun, and every show is really entertaining. Best of all, he's a dog lover. And I know today, because I was listening, his dog Dagny is in the studio with him. Okay, so anybody that loves dogs is going to be a great radio host and a great American. Okay, and I think right now Seth may be going to retrieve Dagny. Now, for those who don't know, hey Dagny.
Oh, hi. Dagny.
Yeah. Now, everybody here and all the listeners, Dagny was named after, do you remember the book, Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand, Dagny Taggart? She was the main character in the book. So this is, again, an intellectually named dog, okay?
Beautiful. So, she's beautiful.
Yeah. Now, what I
am... easier than Sophocles, you know?
Well, and I guess I should also mention that, too, because one of the other great things I like about Seth's show, he does go back to the classics. He goes to Plato, and he goes to Aristotle, Sophocles, Virgil. He's talked about Marcus Aurelius. I mean, these are wonderful educational and enlightening shows for grown-ups, too, okay? So that's Seth Leibson in a nutshell. Now, what I want to do and caution everybody, I do not want to...
Hey, Rob, yeah, I don't... Seth, you need to know this. His dog, the famous one, George, was really named like... He looks like, acts like, and leads like Winston Churchill. Okay. I just wanted to know. Rob's being a little humble now, but he's not there. Sorry, yeah, Rob.
He was already named George when I rescued him. I couldn't change his name to Winston. You know how that is. Anyway, what I want to do is to, and again, welcome Seth. I can't thank you enough for being here, especially after a very exhausting 3-hour tour, as you like to call your radio show. But I would like, if you could, just start maybe with your own walkaway story. When I know you've even mentioned this on your show in the past week or so. Over to you, sir.
Well, first of all, thank you, and to your lovely bride.
Thank you.
I was listening to my obituary there. I was worried about for just a second. I hope not, but you are very, very kind and a dear part of the show. It's a we business, not an I business. I think too many in communications and talk radio forget that. So thank you, Rob, for all you both do. And thank you for having me. my walkaway story. So I grew up here in Phoenix in a pretty liberal household, liberal by probably the most kind of classical of standards. My family, did fundraisers for Democrats. I remember, having a lot of dinner table conversations with conservatives or Republicans who were friends, and my mom and dad, you know, arguing with them. And Cesar Chavez stayed at our house once. I went off to college thinking I would enhance and build on my liberal education, politically liberal, not classically or philosophically liberal. And I was the editor of the school paper. There were actually five schools, and it was a five-school paper over in Claremont, California. Some of you may know some of the schools as Pomona, Scripps, Harvey Mudd, Claremont, McKenna, and Pitzer. So it was a weekly paper, student paper, that served the five colleges. And as Rob mentioned, Professor Harry Jaffa, who was, to me, controversial because conservative and very well-known in conservative circles. For those of you who don't know him, he's a Lincoln scholar, an Aristotle scholar, but famously wrote Barry Goldwater's famous 1964 speech. Many of you may remember the line, "Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue." That's Harry Jaffa. He wrote that speech for Goldwater. He gave a speech, a big speech, and a series of protesters stood up and walked out when he approached the microphone with signs saying something like "silence equals death." And I sat there through the speech and I couldn't get that image out of my head. And I wrote an editorial about it, as I did every week, saying, if they believed in their signs, why didn't they stay and confront him from the microphone during Q&A afterwards? I said, though his views are abominable, the students should have had the conviction of their thoughts and confronted him. So my phone rings within an hour of that issue of the newspaper being published. My phone rings and it's Harry Jaffa. And he says, "I read your editorial and you say my views are abominable. How about you debate me?" And I said, "Look, I'm a snot-nosed sophomore. I'm not going to debate a professor of such repute." He said, "Well, how about a cup of coffee?" I said, "Sure, I will have a cup of coffee." And it changed my life forever. He took my hand and I never let go. I had never really read, I have to tell you, and I think this is true, probably more true now than it was even in my time. I had never been exposed to intellectual conservatism. I had never read an issue of Commentary or I think those were the two main conservative magazines. He started me on that. He introduced me to his landmark book on Lincoln from the 1950s. And I think in his book on Lincoln, the thing I picked up on the most and that I spent the most time talking to him about was something Abraham Lincoln had said, which is that one cannot vote for a moral wrong, which was, of course, about popular sovereignty and the extension of slavery, his famous debate with Stephen Douglas. Anyway, Harry Jaffa took a special interest in me, as I did him, finding him initially a curiosity and then more and more to be a teacher for our times. And as we worked together and as I spent more and more time, I stayed on for graduate school to get a graduate degree under him. That's my walkaway story. Someone extending their hand and saying, "Would you have a cup of coffee?" and exposing me to a line of thought I'd never been exposed to, Rob. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. I realized his arguments were better than theirs.
And the funny thing is, you know, the same really holds true today with the left end of the ideological spectrum. One of the problems you have, of course, is that most of the professors these days are quite non-conservative ideologically. Right. And so
harder to find them. Yeah.
They are. And yet, you know, we always hear about the type of things that went on in the situation with the Professor Jaffa giving a speaking engagement and having those of the left protest, not even willing to listen to another point of view and walk out. And that, again, remains true today. It's very consistent, and it's very depressing.
Yeah.
You know, the group of people that call themselves so tolerant and open-minded just aren't.
Well, it's a shame. It's a shame because on the one hand, they don't make them like that anymore. He never even had a political science degree. His degree was in literature. Interesting. But these people of that generation were so broadly educated that they could do anything. That's one shame. But the bigger shame, what you just said, Rob, is that there are so few conservative professors anymore, or professors that are allowed to be conservative, that the chief point of going to college to obtain wisdom, to obtain knowledge, to be exposed to something like the conflict of ideas, and to be exposed to something one might think leads you to truth or at least intellectual investigation, all gone. That's all gone. To the point where, I never thought I'd say this, but if I had a 17 or 18 year old, I don't know that I'd send them to college. And I never thought I said this. My sister is a professor. My other sister is a teacher. I grew up obviously in some kind of an academic, intellectually thirsty household. I never thought I'd say that. I'd say it now.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, because there's just an awful lot of groupthink going on, and they're not being exposed, I think by design, to other points of view. Or they have been led down a certain, I guess, intellectual path or ideological path where they are not to question other points of view or accept other points of view. And that's a national tragedy.
Local example, you probably know the story of this ASU student who was the general manager of the ASU Walter Cronkite radio station, Blaze. All she did, her only violation, was to, on her Twitter account, link to a story at the New York Post about Jacob Blake and his shooting, showing the arrest warrant. And the reasons he was under arrest, the reasons the police were dispatched to arrest him. And she said, for more of the story, see this. She got fired. She got fired merely for that. That's ASU, that's a public university. My guess is she's gonna have a heck of a good lawsuit on her hands going forward. But that is the default position.
Mm-hmm.
Philosopher in Oxford in the early 20th century named John Smith said the chief purpose of education is to teach children to know when they're hearing rot. And the problem is there's all rot right now. And when the entire canvas, when the entire environment, when the entire ecosystem is rot and there's no truth teller, not even a dissident, not even, you know, some kind of Ibsen-like enemy of the people to call it out, and there isn't. Mm-hmm. Think about what we're creating. Think about what you are sending your child to go and be a part of.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Okay, Stephanie and Craig, do you have any questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, we've had three olders of our kids go through public colleges. The oldest would, every time we visit, be a morphology of the current subject, socialism. Oh, that's so dead on. And
Marxism.
I'm like, oh my God. And then came my next daughter, and she went to ASU and took a philosophy class and then wondered if she existed anymore.
Right.
And then my son, who's a civil engineer now and doing his master's at Cal Poly St. Louis, luckily was in a science. The crossover was a speech class in which they had to argue a point, and he argued gun control. Mm-hmm. He's pro gun control, as we are, our constitutional right. And the interesting thing was, so at the end of the talk, the class was allowed to ask questions, and most of the kids were liberal, and they had no idea, just like what you said, Seth, that we open people's minds. Your show, what I hear, is just your own philosophy in life is keep an open mind, listen to the other side. We all need to be quick to listen, slow to anger, and so to speak. But and be open-minded and hear different people. Get out of your room and hear what's said in other rooms and just listen to other people. And you're doing that with your show.
Well, you're kind of saying it takes a certain humility, though, doesn't it? And not much, but it's rare now, isn't it, to have the humility to once in a while say, you may be right. To just have the humility to say, to know that not everyone agrees with you. I think that's the first rule of politics the left forgets, and sometimes conservatives do too. Not everyone is apt to agree with you. Now, your daughter, who took that philosophy course and isn't sure if she exists, let me give her some advice you can pass to her. That's really handy when it comes to jury duty. So if she is ever asked if she can sit on a jury objectively, all she has to say is, right now, I'm not even sure I exist. She'll be dismissed like that. So it's handy for that. It's handy for that.
Good to know. Good to know.
Other than that, I think it is wrought. And I think it's diminishing of the human condition. God gave us brains to use them and to listen and to speak. And I don't think we should surrender either one of those God-granted gifts. Although I think it is a project of the left to do just that for a reason, for a purpose, for an end. And it won't end well if they win.
That's right. I do want to plug today in Seth's monologue where he was talking a lot about, the recent things going on with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But the ending really hit me good because I think what we're seeing now, historically, traditionally, Republicans have been pretty weak, and they're more go along to get along, compromising. And what that ends up doing, of course, is the other side always wins and gets their way.
Right.
And so Republicans tend to compromise their principles and thoughts and haven't in the past been standing their ground and standing tough.
Right.
And I think what we're beginning to see now, And I think Seth may have been alluding to this in the monologue today, was that there are people that are beginning to stand up. And I think one of the biggest indicators of that is, number one, Donald Trump, who is pushing back. And number two, a lot of those fans of his that like what they see. And number three, I think a lot of the politicians on the Republican side are starting to get it, that maybe that's the way to go. If you are a person that has beliefs and principles that are worth fighting for and standing for, and that's hopefully where we're starting to get maybe a sea change in Republican attitudes and beliefs where, hey, you don't have to necessarily compromise. You don't compromise with moral wrong, like Seth was saying. You don't compromise with principles that you know you are right about. And you don't compromise with people who are lying to not just you, but everybody else.
I don't know if you're like me, but when cable first came on board in maybe the late 80s and 90s, and mostly it was CNN, and then I think MSNBC, and you would see leaders of the House and Senate, pre-Newt Gingrich, Bob Michael and others, go on these shows, and you'd say, really, that's my party? That you can't do better than that. What Newt Gingrich changed, what people said Newt Gingrich changed in 1994 was he gave people a reason to be conservative. And I don't think Republicans did that much before 1994. Ronald Reagan, to be sure, but I think he was alone and so alone that he wasn't able really to build a legacy. What Donald Trump does, there's a line Aristotle has in the politics that the leader shapes the character of the regime. Well, I don't think, I guess he's shaped the left in a way that they've gone ultra crazy, but he's shaped conservatives into a form of thinking that it's okay to fight back. I think he has shown us that. Mm-hmm. The media is saying the same things they have always said about Republicans. They're just doing it louder and they have more outlets to do it. What they don't understand is this Republican who doesn't think they're in charge. They've always thought they're in charge. And you've always seen Republicans go on the Sunday shows or the cable shows trepidatiously. And that's new. It's different. It's changed. He has taught a hopefully generation, but certainly a class of Republicans that it's okay to stand up for what you believe in and push back as hard as they push against you. Because there was this, what do I call it in the book, Rob? I think I call it conservative stock.
Conservatism, Inc. Yeah.
Republicans would keep going into the media, partly thinking they weren't right, partly thinking the other side had the better argument. They don't. And the moment we stop kowtowing to them and start thinking we have the better argument and they should be on defense because what they have to say and what they have to sell has been defeated time and time again in twilight struggles against tyranny, then I think we start winning the day and pushing them into an embarrassment they don't know what to do with.
Absolutely. And again, I think what we're going to probably see with the whole replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg has to do with the fact, and I think you've mentioned this today too, that if the progressive leftist and Democratic platforms in and of themselves are not winning platforms, nor are they pro-American. So, and they know that, and they know that they can't win on the ideas that they actually have. So what they have been doing, of course, is working through the judicial system, through the judicial activism process of, you know, trying to get other RBGs and Sotomayors and Breyers and Elena Kagans to be put on the Supreme Court so that they can interpret the Constitution not as it is written or the originalist intent, but they can also put in their political ideas into law, I guess, because number one, obviously Congress isn't doing that. And I think they've abrogated a lot of their responsibility in terms of the law to the Supreme Court, which is wrong in and of itself. But I think that's the only recourse that the progressives and the left have, because they can't win in the arena of ideas, is to go through a different process where, regardless of what most Americans want, they can go into the judicial process, starting at the lowest levels, going through circuit courts, appellate courts, ultimately the Supreme Court, and force their ideas onto other people. Okay, and that's another thing I think that we have to be eternally vigilant for and be aware of, that this is the kind of ideology we're dealing with. They don't care about what's best for Americans. They care about the will to power, okay? And people must never forget that. And you can see that. You can see from all the people that have been in Congress on the Democrat side for 40 or 50 years, why are they still there? And what have they really accomplished? And I think the thing you say about, you know, well, with Biden, of course, you know, what has he really accomplished other than he just was shamefully fighting against Clarence Brown for the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, I'm sorry. And a lot of the things that he said that he, that aren't true, whether it's from his law school background, his political science awards and so forth, which are actually coming back on the social media scene, that here's a guy that clearly the media is providing cover for, and you don't have the desire by, you know, journalists, whatever that might mean now, to actually dig in and find out further about, okay, Hunter Biden, how did he get that job with Burisma? And when he went with his dad, Joe Biden, to China, and all of a sudden they came out kind of wealthy, and how many big homes does Joe Biden really have, and how did he get that money? And hasn't he just, you know, he's only been in public service for, what, 47, going on 48 years now. How do you become, and how do you enrich your family to such a degree with 47 years of public service? And nobody seems to be asking that kind of question, but they should. You know, and again, these are the kinds of issues that I love about having listening to Seth's show, because he brings up stuff like this, and it's so important for Americans to know about.
Those that don't ask it, I think if they're under 50, maybe under 60, they understand it's wrong, right? But the ideological wager they have is so much more important than the ethical violation. And I think someone like Joe Biden really suffers in the political arena because he grew up politically and matured politically pre-internet, right? Pre-social media. And he got away for years and years and years with telling these tall tales, whether it's about himself or anyone else. I just think he doesn't understand what Dan Rather didn't understand, which is we're smarter than you, or we can be smarter than you, or as smart as you. And we can check these things out. There's a weird hoax going on here with the Democratic nomination, don't you think? I haven't been able to wrap my arms around it. You've heard me struggle with this on air. Mm-hmm. But everyone from Jake Tapper to Tucker Carlson, from Chuck Todd to Laura Ingraham, knows this guy is not there, that you knock in nobody's home. They know this. Everyone knows it. And yet half the country is willing to cover it up or ignore it. It's a very odd thing. I have never seen anything like it. We saw criticisms of Ronald Reagan, of course, for his age, particularly in his reelection bid. You know, if Joe Biden wins, he's older on Inauguration Day than Reagan was when he retires. The difference is Reagan didn't talk like this, miss beats like this, create facts that just make no sense when they come out of your mouth. 200 million? 200 million dead from COVID? Even if you misread that on a teleprompter, shouldn't there be two IQ points in your head that say that's not right? There's a very weird hoax going on, which tells me, Rob, that they will do anything, anything. And that's the most frightening of things.
Oh, I think we've seen that over the course of the last 3.5 years. They've been trying to do anything.
Stephanie, do you have anything to ask?
Yeah, so well, I have a comment on Joe Biden, but then I have a different question for you. In my mind, the vote is really, do you want Kamala Harris? Not if you want Joe Biden, because he is just a placeholder, essentially. He doesn't have the wherewithal to be functioning, and someone or some ones are going to be telling him what to do and how to behave. It's not going to be him. That's just my opinion. But I have a question for you for the Jewish culture, because I know historically, especially the last few elections, very, very heavily vote Democrat. And in 2016, 71% voted Democrat. In my opinion, Trump has been a large advocate for the Jewish community. Do you think that there will be some change in voting with that community towards Trump in this election or not? And why do you or don't you think that?
I think there will be probably some, not as big as in the Hispanic community or the Black community, because Jews are a hard-hearted and a hard-headed people, I think. That 70%, 70-plus percent, really closer to 80% number, almost matches those that are Orthodox 20% versus those are not. And those who are not, what are they moored to? What are they tied to? Up until 20 years ago, people would have said, well, at least they love the state of Israel. That's no longer true. They have bought into the left-wing socialist narrative that Israel is as colonial and imperialist and repressive as the United States of America. And so they have replaced, for their religion, politics, for their God, the Democratic Party. So it's a very hard struggle. And at some point, I don't know when, but at some point, the Jewish community itself may have to have a reckoning as to what consists of being Jewish. What do you have to believe? You know, we often will say Judaism is not a race. It's a religion. It's a belief. But what do you have to believe? Well, you know what a Christian has to believe. And you know what a Muslim has to believe? What does a Jew have to believe? And if it isn't in the sanctity of God and the divine word of God, then maybe it's time for people to stop affiliating as Jews who don't believe in Judaism. Maybe. That's not something you and I can fix. That's not something any outside force can fix. But, you know, you have the first president in the history of the country who has an Orthodox daughter and Orthodox grandchildren, and the left gets away with calling him an anti-Semite, right? These are the times we live in. I don't know what to say about it, except it tells you that you know you're living in, you're living through the looking glass. You know you're living in an Alice in Wonderland world. And those kinds of people, people that say that, should be totally ignored, if not ostracized.
Mm-hmm. True.
Thank you.
No, I mentioned earlier about public policy, and I was just kind of interested, Seth, if any of the listeners, any of the people with the kids are thinking about, what do I want to do when I grow up? And somehow many people sort of stumble into things, but other people may have sort of a plan like, well, I want to serve. I want to maybe make a difference. I want to go into whether it's politics or, you know, more behind the scenes influencers of political thought. How does one, you know, choose between higher education? And then I guess, you know, how do you choose between, you know, Heritage Foundation versus Claremont Institute versus Cato Institute versus American Enterprise Institute? How do you develop a public policy frame of mind? How do you develop the education? And then how do you decide which sort of, I don't know, public policy direction you want to go?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the conservative movement really is very diverse. You're pointing out to the diversity of the conservative movement, which has the Cato Institute, the Heritage Foundation, as you point out, they're going to agree in a Venn diagram on certain things, but not others. William Buckley, right, who is by any definition the founder of modern conservative movement in America, by any definition, he never wrote a book on what conservatism is. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
And he didn't because of its diversity. I would urge a young person, an 18 or 19 year old, to read something libertarian. Maybe it's Ayn Rand. Maybe it's Murray Rothbard. Maybe it's Hayek, Friedrich Hayek. Maybe it's Milton Friedman. One of their classic books, Constitution of Liberty, if it's Hayek, maybe that's a place to start. I would urge them to read something like that. I would urge them to read a book like Crisis of the House Divided by Harry Jaffa, or one of his books, because he takes a different view from the libertarians, as Lincoln did, as Aristotle did. I would take, I would get maybe three or four of the great books that represent or from an author from one of those great schools of thought within the conservative movement. Maybe Irving Kristol's book on neoconservatism would be one for that point of view. And then I would tell the kid, go to Washington. If they're 18 or older, go. It's a great place for a young person. It truly is. I've lived in a lot of cities, a lot of big cities, Los Angeles, Austin, New York, Washington, Boston. I will tell you one good thing about Washington, and it's eminently true, and it's the one good thing I can say about it. I've never seen a city reward hardworking merit for a young person like the city of Washington. If you're a young person who keeps their nose clean, their side of the street clean, works hard, works diligently, within 3 years, you can be working for whoever you want to be. It is good that way. That's an unknown thing about Washington. Mm-hmm. Send them there. And there's a lot of think tanks, and you can eat for free because every night they have events and they serve hors d'oeuvres and cocktails. So you can live on the cheap if you live in the suburbs or in the exurbs of Washington, and you can go and work at these think tanks, volunteer, intern, get a job. I really recommend that. I really do.
Now, is that after you get a degree or prior to?
I don't think it matters anymore.
I don't think it really matters anymore. Once upon a time, it may have mattered more.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, contact a congressman, a friend, someone like me, someone like you has a connection. They can always, someone always knows someone in Washington who's looking for an intern. It's not that hard to, it's a hiring city. It always will be a hiring city. The economy in Washington always booms, right? That's a sad story, but it's eminently true and it works well for young people.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Who are some of your favorite guests?
That's a great question. My favorite guests are guests I have to prepare for, are guests that make me do something. You know, you do this every day for 3 hours. It can be, to some, it can be seen as a grind, or if not a grind, monotonous or tedious. I like a guest that makes me think. I like a guest that says something a little different. Probably my favorite guests are academics and professors because they go a little broader and a little wider than the talking points that I'm used to. They make me think. I like a guest that makes me think. I like world-class intellects. I like Hadley Arkus. I like Robbie George. I like people like that. I like Heather MacDonald. Who you mentioned earlier. I think it's important to have guests to be sure, but I think if I'm gonna have a favorite guest, it's usually gonna be every anthropologist likes his own tribe. It's usually probably gonna be someone from academia.
Yeah, I think that's great. Okay, you guys, ask questions.
I have another question for you. So I am fortunate enough. This was by accident to be a homeschooling parent, and we're now on our 7th year with our youngest 2 boys. And I am teaching U.S. history to a bunch of high schoolers. And I would love your thoughts on a couple of points that I really need to ensure that I instill in those youngins to help them.
Well, I love that you're teaching and you're homeschooling. And if COVID did anything, I think it showed a lot of parents something the homeschooling community has known for years, which is that every parent is a teacher, even though every teacher may not be a parent. And the parent is a child's first and all but indispensable, most important teacher. What a parent does in teaching, you cannot pay someone enough to do in their stead. So I love that about you, and I'm glad you said that. American history. So it's our worst subject. I don't know if you're aware of that. For all the hand-wringing we engage in over reading, math, science, knowledge, the National Assessment of Education Progress actually shows that American history is our nation's worst subject. 50% of high school seniors get an F in history, fail American history. Think about what that means. Think about what that means. At the age of 18, just as we're sending children, new adults off to either college, maybe the military, maybe their first job, we are sending them off, 50% of them, alien to their own country. We talk a lot about illegal aliens, and we're right to do so. My biggest concern is the aliens we're making who are homegrown within our own country, and what a tragedy when we have the second greatest story ever told, the American story. I really believe it. It is the second greatest story ever told. So I think the best thing is having a good book. And the two I recommend is Wilfred Maclay, Land of Hope, and William Bennett's book, The Last Best Hope. It's actually 3 volumes. They were both meant for students in 8th and 12th grades or elementary and high school. And there are curriculums around them as well. Wilfred Maclay and William Bennett's history books, I think, are the best. I had a part in one of them, and I was privileged to do so. But once you instill a love of this story that is America, all its warts, but all its wonderful blessings and expansions of freedom, I think you can awaken a life. I think you can awaken a young person in this country to love this country. I grew up, as you probably did, really not aware of these wars about American history. I mean, we probably all had the same standard form of study. I didn't realize really until college that it was controversial, but it's only controversial because it's been distorted by a left-wing narrative that the professoriate wants to impose on us. You, like me, probably are not opposed to studying America's warts. We have them. Of course we do. We're an imperfect people. But what the left wants to do, I think what you and I want to do, I'll tell you what I want to do. What I want to do, I want to study the warts and the all will weigh out. The all will, I mean, there's a reason that we have an immigration problem in a way that China doesn't have, and in a way that Germany doesn't have, and in a way that Russia doesn't have. We call it the Gates test, right? Every country has gates. You lift the gates, which way do they run? You shut the gates, which way do they run? They run here for a reason. Warts and all is what we want to teach. They just want to teach the warts, and that's bad history. Mm-hmm. It's bad history because it's distortive. It's wrong. Once you understand the human condition, which is imperfect, you understand the truth of what Daniel Moynihan said, which is when he was on the Senate floor, he said, "Am I embarrassed to speak for less? Not. Show me a better one." Mm-hmm. We're still the last best hope of birth.
Yeah, and I think that coupled with, you know, the miracle really of the founding and our revolution, which really isn't being taught, and sort of, you know, accenting what Seth has been saying, not only are they saying America's bad, they're also the current professorial class, they're also saying America's the problem in the world. You know, we're the real problem, but we're not. And I think it was Donald Rumsfeld who said, America is not what's wrong with the world. You know, he was a believer of American exceptionalism, I guess we call it, and the miracle that's our country. And we're still forming a more perfect union.
There's nothing more maddening to me, more angering to me than seeing people in Hong Kong risk life and limb to raise the American flag and sing the American national anthem, just as the youth did in Tiananmen Square in 1989, carrying copies of the Declaration of Independence and papier-mâché statues of our Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
For people, nothing more maddening to me than to see that while people in our National Basketball Association, Basketball Association, spit on them. Mm-hmm. What do the people of Hong Kong, what do the people of Tiananmen, what do they know that the NBA doesn't? A lot is the answer.
Seth, mm-hmm. we're really enjoying this. We're going to have to look at our time, guys. We have got about 2.5 minutes. You know how that runs, Seth. Hey, give us, Rob, you may have a closed question you want to ask. Seth, give us one thought on, you know, how we can kind of make a difference. Boy, we've enjoyed what you've said. In a simple fashion, all of us, what can we do to make a difference? Raising that flag and holding that up like they did in Tiananmen Square.
Well, God bless you for doing this. And Joe, thank you. Stephanie, Craig, and Rob, and Mrs. Rob. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Mrs. Rob.
Thank you. I know your name. Yeah. He calls me Mrs. Rob, so I was being deferential.
I know.
Seth, you are a blessing, just like Rob said you would be.
No. Thank you.
We want to thank you.
I think we take our cues from our best. And to me, the best was Winston Churchill. For Winston Churchill understood the value of never giving in, knowing the human condition, and knowing the difference between good and evil. We haven't spent a lot of time on the issue of good and evil. You probably do a lot of that here. But you combine the notion of be not afraid and never give in and there's nothing that can stop that force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And right. If people want to know what it is we find so great in this so imperfect man, Donald Trump, and yes, God knows he's imperfect, worse than imperfect, God knows, but he never gives in because he's fighting for something bigger and better that he knows he is less than. He knows he is less than how good the thing is he's fighting for. And probably we all need to know that.
That's
so
right.
With a dose of humility, knowing the difference between right and wrong, being secure in the knowledge that we may not have all the answers, and knowing the difference between rot and greatness, knowing that it's all on the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, really is. If you listen closely to the Democratic Party and who's powerful there, understand that what we spent fighting Stalin and Khrushchev and Brezhnev,
mm-hmm.
what we spent fighting Hitler,
mm-hmm.
we never thought it would be here.
That's right.
Excuse my French. Damn it, it's here.
That's mm-hmm. right, man. All right.
That's right.
That's it. Well, God bless you, sir. And you're in our prayers, and we're going to be listening in to The Patriot, and we'll be looking at, what's the number again? 9?
AM 960, The Patriot. Get the app.
AM 960, get the app. That's it. All right, right. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, too, we're so glad you were in here with us tonight. And you listen to Seth also. He's got great things to say. And most important, Seth, we feel your heart, sir.
Thank you.
Want to have a heart like that. We believe in the same things. God bless you and keep you and use you as he is. And know that you're in our prayers, my friend. We look forward to having you again someday. And hopefully, we look forward to meeting you, sir. It's going to be great. Next week, we're going to have Joe Collins running the 43rd District.
Next hour of my years. Thank you. God bless you.
Yeah, all right.
Thanks for coming, sir.
Next week, Joe Collins, the 43rd District against Maxine Waters. That's really going to be something. So you're going to want to hear and be a part of this next week as we see this Navy veteran come in and unseat the lady who tried to start the impeachment of President Trump. You're really going to enjoy this. Again, crew, staff, everybody on there, God bless you. Love you guys. You're the best. And we'll look forward to seeing you all next week, 6 Pacific, 8 Central, 9 Eastern, Raising Expectation. Now go out there and raise your expectations this year, this week rather, and make a difference for who you are as a citizen of the United States of America and a believer in someone that we know is greater than us. God bless you all.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.